This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. On August 5th, Seattle citizens will be asked to vote on Proposition 1, a measure to create a Seattle Park District to provide ongoing funding to maintain, operate, and improve parks, community centers, pools, and other recreation facilities and programs. The district would have the same boundaries as the City of Seattle and be governed by a board composed of the Seattle City Council members. It could exercise the powers described in state law, including levying a property tax of up to 75 cents on $1,000 of assessed value and contracting with the City of Seattle to perform the district's functions. Is the formation of an independent Metropolitan Parks District the best way to fund Seattle parks? To help answer this question, I have as my guest Ken Bounds, former Seattle Parks Superintendent and a member of the Board of Directors for Seattle Parks Foundation, a group urging a yes vote on Proposition 1. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Seattle Parks Foundation?
Sure. The Parks Foundation was created approximately 11 years ago. It was formed under Mayor Paul Schell at the time, and I was superintendent. And we asked individuals to come together to provide some philanthropic support for the park system in general and for projects in specific. And they did come together a couple of years later, hired staff. Karen Daubert was our first staff person. That has since evolved into an organization that does philanthropic work in our parks throughout the city. It's carried out several fundraising efforts, beginning with the large one at Lake Union Park at the south end of the lake, and continuing today to Rainier Beach Urban Farm, which is located in southeast Seattle, working with TILTH and other community organizations down there to realize this vision of an urban farm, working urban farm in southeast Seattle.
How extensive is our park system in Seattle, and what do the parks provide?
Well, we have a fairly extensive system. It's made up of lots and lots of little parks and lots of big parks and facilities. It's over 6,200 acres. We have over 480 buildings, over 430 parks, individual parks that range in size from Discovery Park, Magnuson Park, Seward, Lincoln, which are obviously the bigger parks, to neighborhood parks that in some cases are about the size of a single-family lot. Also includes 11 pools, 26 community centers, the Woodland Park Zoo, the Seattle Aquarium, Kubota Gardens, Japanese Gardens, Arboretum, where we have a relationship with the university and with the Arboretum Foundation and managing that property. Boulevards, like Washington Boulevard. A lot of people don't think of boulevards as being part of the park system, but in fact they are. And as I think you know, the system was originally designed, and the bones of it were certainly set out by the Olmsted firm in the early 1900s. And I think we can look back and credit them with beginning this legacy of a wonderful park system in Seattle. And their effort was to look at the whole city, look at where can you have those major anchor parks like Woodland Park, Green Lake, Seward, Lincoln, and then how do you connect them and how do you make sure that there are opportunities for people within walking distance of their home to enjoy the green spaces and the park spaces. And they also really focused on the value of parks along shorelines. And so parks like Green Lake, the parks along Lake Washington, and the ones along the Sound, Alki, Golden Gardens, are very important to connecting the land and the water in Seattle, which is something that's unique to our city. So it's a fairly extensive park system.
What is the current status of our park system?
Well, it's somewhat of a contradictory status. It continues to grow somewhat. We've been successful at that through levies. Yet at the same time, the city's been unable to fund the ongoing operations and maintenance. And I'll give you an example of that. We had four successful levies, all of whom included some funds for building new community centers or expanding existing ones. Yet in the last 6 years, we've reduced the hours of those centers significantly so that they're not accessible for all like they had been, say, 6, 7 years ago.
Would you say more about how the parks are funded? We've had the levies, but the city also provides some funding.
Yes, absolutely. It goes way back, but the park system has always been funded by general tax revenue. And for the city, that's a sales tax, property tax, and B&O tax. It's also been funded by fees, so people do pay to play in certain situations. The zoo, aquarium, if you want to play on a ball field, or if you go to a community center and take a yoga class, you pay by fees. That used to be, I believe back in the late 60s, that was about 13% of the park budget. Now it's about 26% of the park budget. So you can see there's been a shift from general tax dollars to a little bit more of the pay-to-play model. One of the unique aspects of the city's funding is during Forward Thrust, which was a 1968 bond issue. There were 12 bond issues on the ballot. One of the successful ones was for parks, and in today's terms, it funded about $450 million worth of new parks in Seattle, including Freeway and the Aquarium. But one of the aspects of that was they had a charter amendment that dedicated 10% of certain fees and revenues to the city for parks. And that was their strategy then to make sure that those new parks that got built with Forward Thrust got funding for maintenance and operations. So of the city's park budget, about half of it is general fund money, and half of that general fund money is charter revenue. The other half are fees and charges and state grants and capital money that comes through, like the funding from special levies that we've had. So that pretty much makes up the city park budget.
If you look at the budget for Seattle Parks, where are the main expenses?
They're really in two big areas. One is just maintaining the land, maintaining the parks and the facilities. So that's probably, and I haven't looked recently because I've been not part of the system, but I think, that's probably a quarter to a third of the staff involved in maintenance, just picking up the litter, emptying the litter cans, fixing them when a faucet breaks, mowing the grass, pulling the weeds, planting the flowers, taking care of the ball fields. That's probably about that much. And then another third or so is recreation. So the people running the community centers, operating the pools, the lifeguards, running the outdoor programs, running the senior programs, and then also recreation programs around youth. And so recreation's a big chunk, and then the maintenance of the facilities is a big chunk.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ken Bounds, former Seattle Parks Superintendent and a board member at the Seattle Parks Foundation. Our topic is Seattle Parks and Proposition 1, a proposal to establish a Seattle Park District. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You've alluded a bit to this, but what have been the challenges in finding adequate funding for parks?
Well, really, there have been three major challenges. One is just our tax system is not the best for local government. We do not have home rule. The state has not granted cities in the state of Washington with the ability to create our own taxes. If we wanted to have an income tax, we probably couldn't have that because we don't have that authority. The state legislature gives the cities the authority to impose certain taxes. And with that imposition comes also the fact that by initiative, we've had our taxes limited. And while the statewide vote, for example, for Initiative 747, which was a Tim Iman initiative, and Initiative, 624, which was the motor vehicle excise tax initiative, both of those started by Tim Iman, those passed statewide and they imposed limits on property taxes in the one hand, 747, and on the motor vehicle excise taxes in the other for local governments. So while those measures failed in Seattle, they passed statewide, and I always refer to that as untaxation without representation. our voters wanted to keep those revenues coming into the city because that was important. So that's one aspect that makes it difficult to fund all city services. Another's just been the economy. We've had it's referred to as the Great Recession, the worst recession since the Great Depression. And during that time period, the city lost significant revenue as sales tax dropped by, 18% and property tax, the valuations went down in the housing market, so the property tax dropped. Also, the business and occupation tax was reduced. So when that happened, and the city has very little opportunity to raise taxes given the fact that they're all authorized by the state, you have a devastating effect on the budget. And then the third, which plays in with those other two, is just priorities. You're a city official responsible for the budget, the mayor and the city council, and you have demands on you for police and fire, human services, housing, transportation, libraries, parks. What happens not only in Seattle, but I think throughout the country and at the state and national level as well, is parks take a lower priority. And I can tell you why. I mean, having been both a budget director with the city and park superintendent, you have this system that has, that's 6,200 acres, 11% of the property, has all these facilities, and you can nip up around the margins. I mean, you can cut a laborer here and maybe not notice that in that park the edging doesn't get done as often as you expect, or the weeds don't get pulled. You can cut back the wading pool hours, instead of from 9 to 6, become 10 to 4, which limits access. You can reduce the hours at community centers. You know, the park system is made up of a million small things, and those can all get crunched when you're having a budget restraint like we've had in the last 6 years, and not necessarily right off the bat notice the effect of that. But ultimately what you're doing, and this is where we are today, is you're limiting access, especially in lower income communities, because they don't have the resources to raise money on their own through advisory councils to keep programs going. And, you know, you end up having the vegetation starting to deteriorate, and those are real assets. If you're a gardener, you know that your 35-year-old rhododendron does take some care to continue. And especially if you're planting new trees or new vegetation, you've got to water it and you've got to take care of that. Well, you might not notice that on an incremental basis, but over time, you'll see the diminution, I guess, if you will, of the quality park system that we value and we've learned to enjoy.
Well, let's focus now on Proposition 1. Proposition 1 proposes the creation of a Seattle Park District. What is a park district?
This is the other side of the coin about the state. So this is happening nationwide as well, where states are granting authority to local jurisdictions to create institutions, in this case a park district, to deal with some of those problems that we can't deal with because we don't have the home rule, we don't have the flexibility in raising revenue. So park district by state law, it's called a metropolitan park district, and it gives voters the authority to create a park district, which then allows that district to levy a tax, which then allows that tax to be used for dedicated purposes for parks and recreation. Now, in the state of Washington, up until 2002, we essentially had one metropolitan park district, and that was Tacoma. And that park district was created in the early 1900s. The law was passed in order to create the district in Pierce County. Since then, there had been one other in Yakima, and then it disbanded, I think, in the 40s. And the reason that was the case and nobody else had instituted is because the law was very cumbersome and very specific. You had to meet certain criteria. In 2002, I was on a task force at the state level with people from Yakima and Richland and all other park superintendents around the state, and we persuaded the legislature to change the law and make it more flexible so that jurisdictions that have a park system already could capture, if you will, that junior taxing authority in a way that made it work for us. What that means is that they've allowed us to create a park district, which is what we're proposing in Seattle, that allowed us to have the city council be the commissioner so we don't have a separately elected body. And then it allowed us to contract then between the park district and the city so that all of those funds that are raised by the park district get transferred into the city, and the park district is contracting with the city to allocate that money, to spend it, and to do so in a way that's consistent with the city charter and the city ordinances and the administrative code. So there would be no new bureaucracy, no new administration. And from a user point of view, what you will see is more resources going into the park system that are dedicated to parks that cannot be allocated or reallocated for police or fire, human services, transportation. And you will not see any kind of bureaucratic friction, if you will, between two different entities that you might if, in fact, you had created a separately elected commission. So from my point of view, having been following this for over 20 years, is it's a perfect solution for Seattle because we're able to access money that's dedicated to parks, not general fund money. This is just like the charter revenue in the late 60s. It's saying the only thing you can spend this money on is parks and recreation. So we get access to that money. We get to spend it on parks and recreation. And as an added bonus in this agreement that the city council has adopted, that will then get adopted by the city council as the park commissioners, they've made the commitment to continue the current general fund funding for parks at its current level plus inflation. So the park system is not only not going to be cut like it has been in the last several years with its general fund money, and is going to secure additional resources to be devoted exclusively to parks and recreation, so we can end up with a clean, safe, accessible park system that I think we all value.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ken Bounds, former Seattle Parks Superintendent and a board member at the Seattle Parks Foundation. Our topic is Seattle Parks and Proposition 1, a proposal to establish a Seattle Park District. What would individual homeowners pay in taxes if the maximum tax allowed is enacted by a Seattle Park District?
Well, the maximum tax is not being imposed. The proposal is that it would be about 33 cents per thousand assessed value. So for a $400,000 home, it ends up being about $4 more than the current levy a month. So it'd be about $48 more than the current property tax levy, which means it will be a total of somewhere around $128 for parks.
And would the money raised by the tax be adequate for park maintenance and acquisition?
Well, it certainly gets us on the right track. Adequacy is an interesting question because the big piece of this funding is for major maintenance and ongoing maintenance. So two-thirds of the money are going to fix things and then to maintain things. And that's been one of the problems we've had, frankly, with the levy general fund system. The levies we've had from 91 for community centers, 99 for community centers, 2000 Pro Parks levy, and 2008, virtually all of the money, with the exception of the 2000 levy, went to buy property, build new things, develop parks. Hardly any of it, except for some in the 2000 levy, went for maintenance and operations. The park district gives us money to rectify that so that we can not only maintain what we are buying and building and developing, but also we're able to fix a huge backlog of major maintenance. The boilers and roofs and irrigation systems and all of our parks need upgrading or replacing in many cases. So that's the main focus of this park district. But there's also money here for building for the future, because the committee that put this together, and it was a citizens committee that spent almost a year looking at the needs of the park system and looking at best ways to fund it, they wanted to make sure that there was money in here to continue acquiring property as the city continues to grow and get more dense in certain neighborhoods, and to make sure that there was money in here to acquire and develop new parks as they became warranted.
What would you say to those who are concerned that citizens would have less input in decision-making and there would be less accountability if an independent park district is formed, because now we vote on levies and have direct input that way?
What I would say to that is read the ordinance, read the agreement, read the interlocal agreement. There is a more robust citizen process built into this parks district legislation than in any of the previous levies. There's not only a citizens committee that this time will be made up also of members of the Seattle Park Board, so you're going to have this connection between the park board and the citizens and the superintendent and the mayor and the council, but you also have annual audits built in. You also have annual reports provided by the citizens committee. The goal here was to be as transparent as possible throughout the process, and in 6 years, there will be an updated planning process that will involve citizens, just like we've had with previous levies and just like we had coming up with the recommendations this year for the park district. There'll be a new citizens committee that will lay out the parameters for the level of funding and what the funding should be for the next 6 years. So what's missing is having a separate vote. And let me tell you why that's important. And this is somewhat in retrospect, because I've been involved in all the levies really since the mid-80s. In building a levy to go to the voters and asking people what they want, what has happened is we've identified new things because of our growth, because of our neighborhood planning, trying to make sure that the communities that are receiving the growth are getting the amenities they want and need. And so we've been very good about that. And so we've had lots of acquisition and lots of park development in the levies. And we built that partly as a way to make sure that we were successful with the ballot. Well, that's been successful and it's been great. The problem with that is you're missing the O&M part of it, the operations and maintenance. You have to come up with a way to fund that. And so in going back and looking at what is our goal? Well, our goal is to have a sustainably funded park system that will provide access for all, we'll have clean and quality and safe parks. And how do you get that? Well, the only way to get that, in my mind, is through a park district that creates a dedicated funding source that is forever. So you don't go back to the voters every 6 years. You may have a council in 6 years that decides not to put a levy on the ballot. You may have one that decides to put a levy on the ballot, but we don't want to put any O&M in it. We want to just have new things. So this way, you've got the best of both worlds. You've got the funding mechanism that money is totally dedicated to parks. It's new money, doesn't get used by anybody else. And you have a process set in place in ordinance that every 6 years there'll be a very transparent public process to build the bones of the next funding cycle.
If you look nationwide, how common are metropolitan park districts?
They're not common, but they're also not uncommon, I guess I should say. I mean, if you look at the major successful districts, the successful park systems, the ones we all look to in the profession, you look at Chicago, they have a park district and they're very successful at that and they have adequate funding. You look at Minneapolis, they've got a park district. You know, I participated in a study with a colleague, Tom Byers, in Cedar River as part of this work for the Park Foundation, and we looked at how other jurisdictions fund parks around the country. And I can tell you from experience, a lot of the eastern cities, older eastern cities, the Baltimores, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York to a certain extent, their park systems have been cut dramatically, 30%, 40%, closing parks, closing pools. Those did not have park districts. They have basically a general fund competing for resources, and as the city resources declined, they lost out to public safety and health and transportation and housing and those other human service needs.
Who is in favor of Proposition 1? Which groups?
You know, if you go to our website, they have a very long list of endorsers. Labor is obviously a supporter. Environmental organizations like the Sierra Club and the Cascade Bicycle Club. There are lots of community and civic organizations that have formally endorsed, including several of the legislative district councils and elected officials, former mayors, current. This thing passed by citizens committee of your everyday park citizen. I think it was 14-1, something like that. It passed by the city council unanimously by the mayor, and it's endorsed by many, many people, as well as lots of organizations. You can go to our website, seattleparksforall.com, and see who all has endorsed us.
And who is against Proposition 1?
There's a group of park advocates that have, throughout the process, have felt like a levy was a better approach to this. And to be perfectly honest, their voices were heard. And if you look at the interlocal agreement that the council adopted, every single issue that the opponents raised during the process got addressed. The accountability got addressed. The maintenance of effort, keeping the level of general fund, got addressed. And I tell you, frankly, we very much appreciated that, because that kept the pressure on the elected officials to meet some of those commitments that we felt were very important for this park district to be successful. So they didn't succeed in that process. The council looked at all the options, the citizens looked at the options, and then they went with the park district. So frankly, it's surprising to me that there's still opponents to this.
If Proposition 1 doesn't pass, what will be done to address park funding?
That's a good question. There is no alternative B. I mean, this was weighed very heavily by the city council. And, you know, there's a limited amount of property tax capacity in that levy capacity. You know, half of the property tax that's levied from Seattle on a property owner comes from voted levies. And that's diminishing, that capacity is. And so if this doesn't pass and that capacity continues to shrink, we have seen no commitment to either future levies or other funding mechanisms. I guess what will happen is the system will continue to diminish, and I think that will hurt the least of the ones of us and certainly violate our values of having a quality, accessible, healthy, clean, safe park system for all.
And so a parks district provides new taxing authority and therefore more funding.
Yes.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I obviously want people to vote yes on Prop 1. I step back and put this in a much bigger context and looking at the history of the park system. And I had the privilege of being superintendent for 11 years and having some stewardship responsibility for that. And I look at it as this is right up there with the great decisions the public made in previous decades, when the city council hired the Olmsteads to design the park system that we enjoy today, when the civic leaders like Jim Ellis and others put forth Forward Thrust and really filled in that park system in the 1960s. And then I think when we started doing the levees in the 90s and 2000s, that really added to the park system as we grew and as the city started regaining population. This is a legacy decision. If the voters support Prop 1 and we get access to this dedicated, sustainable funding for parks, we've created a legacy that will continue into the future and people will look back on it and say, wow, there were some really forward-thinking people in 2014 that saw that the only way you're going to make a quality, safe, clean, accessible park system is by having dedicated money.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Ken.
Thank you for having me.
You are just listening to Ken Bounds, former Seattle Parks Superintendent and a board member at the Seattle Parks Foundation. Seattle citizens will have the opportunity to vote on Proposition 1 in the upcoming August 5th primary. For more information, check on the web at seattleparksforall.com and seattleparksfoundation.org. Again, seattleparksforall.com and seattleparksfoundation.org. For views opposing Proposition 1, go to ourparksforever.com and metropolitanparksdistrict.wordpress.com. Again, ourparksforever.com and metropolitanparkdistrict.wordpress.com. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.